Hi, everybody. I'm Scott.
Hello, I'm Julie.
And this is a Good Story It's Hard to Find podcast,
where two Catholic friends talk about the books and movies they love and the traces of the one reality that lie below the surface.
Yes. Is there too much reality in this one? It was all out of order. It was a non-linear order.
Yeah.
Oppenheimer is what we're going to talk about. Yeah, by friend of the pod, Christopher Nolan.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we've seen him a few times on this. He just keeps making good movies.
Yeah, and I was watching this. Of course, this is a more simply told movie in a lot of ways, because we know it's a man's life, right?
Yeah.
And he helped us keep track of the timelines by one of them was in black and white, which was a certain other person speaking. One of them is in a room. Yeah, I mean, and then the other things you kind of sort out as you go, but it was more straightforward because we knew what was going to happen in terms of developing the bomb.
Yes,
right. We didn't know about this person and all their struggles, but he, as I was watching it, I was again struck by the fact that he must deeply struggle himself with moral questions to so often make them the center of what's going on.
That's interesting observation. Yeah. He certainly is drawn to those stories.
Yeah. Batman, Inception.
Yeah.
Tenet, who knows? Because nobody knows what happened in that movie. It's impossible to tell.
Oh, man, that's fun. I'm looking at a review here. I'm on IMDb. There's a review here, a 6-star review out of 10. 6 out of 10.
Okay.
Too loud and too long.
Oppenheimer?
Yeah. What do you think?
No.
Okay. Well, I don't think so either. But it just made me laugh because...
I didn't want to watch it. I mean, because I was like, I suppose. But my husband really wanted to see it. Rose is always going to watch a Christopher Nolan movie.
Mm.
And I'm generally on board with that. And I just thought, they're going to drone on and blah, 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 and hearings and so forth just from reading the description. And then I got done and I said, how could they make a 3-hour movie so interesting?
Hmm. I felt the same way, even this time through it.
Yeah, it just, me too.
I was riveted. Yeah, still riveted. And yeah, you know, we know the general story of Oppenheimer, and even knowing that, just how Nolan goes about it, there's lots of faces, right?
Yeah.
Faces in this movie, and... I saw a review that talked about the faces. I can't remember where I saw that, but just there was so many close-up faces. And
I mean, when even Casey Affleck's in there as the bad guy for the army, we went, oh my gosh, Casey Affleck's in this too, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, it seems at this time, you know, if Christopher Nolan asked anybody, they'd say, sure. Yeah,
he's one of those
minutes?
Directors.
That's fine, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, he's totally one of those directors. And then the other thing that made this kind of interesting to me in a different way is I don't actually use the Hallo app, but every Lent they'll pick a different book. Like they have Walter Sizek's He Leadeth Me, about the priest who was imprisoned in Soviet Russia.
Yeah.
And they went through that during Lent. And this year, they're going through A Song for Nagasaki.
Which I didn't know that.
Yeah, and talked about. And if you listen to Father Mike Schmitz's homilies, he's keying a lot of his homilies to that book also.
Really?
Just because he's part of Ascension, which does the Hallo app. And so it's really well woven together for anybody. Now, I tried a little bit of Hallo and that, and it just didn't strike me right.
Uh-huh.
But I have a friend who's totally into it, and he's never come across the Takashi Nagai. And so he was talking about the movies it's making him watch.
Mm.
And Oppenheimer was one. And he was like, because I'm just wondering, is there a connection? And I had to say for this, no.
Yeah,
not really.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, except for the moral searching and everything. But it was interesting realizing all these looks at this particular event and time period that I've been exposed to.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Just seems, you know, it's connected to everything, it feels like. And we talked about Takashi Nagai, a book called A Song for Nagasaki by Paul Glynn. And that was Good Story 305, for those who are interested.
Not that long ago.
I looked it up while you were talking. Yeah, it was 2003. In fact, April 18th. Two years ago.
No, not 2003, 2023.
2023, that's correct. Right, okay. 2023. Okay. Yeah, and I couldn't help but to think of that book while watching this movie, even the first time I saw it. So,
right.
Because there's just an incredibly powerful scene of the bomb going off in that. That's like, you know, that's not going away. That is not going away. And it is just something. Yeah. But yeah, then to see this side, Oppenheimer. And, you know, we really can't have spoilers in this one, you know, because we know what Oppenheimer's life is, right? He's the history is that he's the one that they picked up to direct the development of the nuclear bomb in a race with the Nazi Germany to try and get it first. And his conflicted, I guess, guilt. He was conflicted the entire time, trying to convince himself that this is the right thing to do. He was really sure. And then what they did to him after, was about, I think it was 8 to 12 years after, the bomb was dropped. That he had his security clearance stripped away and all this stuff. And all that is being in Christopher Nolan fashion, told in a nonlinear way that I mentioned. So you've got a little bit of this quote unquote trial that he's going through, at the same time as we're seeing his life when he was fairly young and all the way up through the whole development of the bomb and the explosion of the first one out in New Mexico. And,
and some of it is new and there could be spoilers, I suppose. So we'll save some of that stuff for later, but, because they're the personal stuff I didn't know anything about and a lot of it didn't matter. I mean, he chose very difficult women to love. That's all I can say.
Yes. Yeah.
But there is an interesting bookend situation, I think, between him and Straw's Robert Downey Jr.'s character.
Yeah.
Where, and that doesn't really come into the last third of the movie truly as a focus, I think. But that's a really interesting contemplation, I think, that Nolan gives us. And the thing that you can't really spoil because you just have to experience it. But all the way through, we're being shown a little bit maybe of what it's like to be a genius, to see things in a completely different way and to see somebody who's excited by the potential of discovery of no one's ever thought about, like, you know, what happens when a star runs out of fuel. You know, those kind of things. And so we're kind of taken a little bit into the scientific dream world, the theoretical world, you
know?
Right,
yeah. Yeah, he's talking about stars and implosions and thinking about these things. And you know, genius is a gift and a curse, right? He's isolated. He's always isolated. He's never, I mean, even when he's with somebody, I've got a pretty strong feeling, you know, that he was isolated all the time. Like, you know, I don't know. This is what I felt, you know, with his character, was that there was some frustration about being understood and having points of view about what he thought people would do, and they're not doing that, and it's perplexing to him.
Also unyielding about what he thought. So, and that's shown to us a little bit in, I guess if there's spoilers, we're heading there.
Okay. Here we go.
So don't you think,
So
go watch the movie if you haven't, or watch it again, because it's definitely worth rewatching. But his relationship with his brother, when his brother brings his, girlfriend to that party, And he can't be bothered to even remember her name because she's so uninteresting to him. And it's not deliberate snubs, which of course makes it worse. He's just like, oh, uh-huh. You know?
Yeah.
And later when they're, he and I can't remember the name of the other scientist with the glasses who was the one who kept saying, yes, but you're being theoretical. You need to be practical. They're up camping in the New Mexico mountains, and his brother says, you know, he's going to get married to this girl. And he's like, oh, huh? He's like, look, I know you don't like her, but here's, you know, I want a family. I want all this stuff. And he just can't even, he's like, but her, you know?
Yeah.
Says Oppenheimer. And he's like, look, says the brother. And so then he backs off of it and says, well, I'm happy for you. If you're happy, I'm happy. And he's just going to let it go. But you get the feeling that that's just a little insight to how he treated most of the world, as you're saying.
Yeah. It's like he's not quite living in the same world. Yeah.
Yeah. Because, for example, can you explain to me the whole potassium cyanide and apple thing? Why are we shown that?
I don't know why we're shown that. It's like...
You tell someone later and they say, oh, you didn't like it? Oh, I liked it very much.
Mm-hmm.
Is it just he had so little control? He was mad then and he did it?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. And how does anybody know that he did? You know, if that happened in actual real life, he would have had to tell somebody, right?
Well, yeah. And at the end, in the movie, he tells somebody.
Right, right.
You know.
So, yeah. I don't know. It's an interesting piece of character. It's like, what on earth are you doing?
You know? That's it, because it doesn't matter if it happened. This is Christopher Nolan telling us this guy's story. And right, that was such a distinct event. And the only thing I can think is, you know, he acted on impulse. He didn't stop to think about who else might get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
Like Niels Bohr, somebody who he greatly admired, who was getting ready to eat that apple.
Yeah. Yeah, and that way, when you explain it that way, it's kind of... again, a microcosm of what he's doing with the entire bomb, right?
It's foreshadowing.
Yeah, foreshadowing of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so and what a moral quagmire that is. I don't know if you want to get into that at this point.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
But Let's do it. the whole thing, you know, he kept thinking. Gosh, it feels like there should be more leading up to this, but he just kept thinking, what's going to happen is that once we create the bomb, once somebody sees it go off, no one will ever use it, and it'll stop there, right? Which is, of course, that's not what happened. And and I was even curious, you know, it was like, okay, they stripped him of his security clearance. And I was like, what is the significance of that? And what I learned was that what they really did was they removed him from any policy making in the future. And that's what they wanted him out of, you know, because he was like, we shouldn't be doing this. We should be talking. We should be, you know, the world should be coming together to do nuclear energy and, you know, we shouldn't build H-bombs. We shouldn't come up with these different things to, you know, we certainly don't need 100 million of these and all that stuff. And whether he was fooling himself or was blind to human nature, he had these hopes, these stated hopes that that's what was going to happen. And
And when I saw that in our household, for some reason, we've all latched on to this idea is because the machine gun was invented by somebody. Okay, 1884 is when the machine gun was invented. And he basically had seen the carnage of the Civil War and said, this can kill so many people so fast, it's going to terrify everyone. So no one will ever use it. And nobody will fight these kind of wars again.
Wow. Well,
of course, what happened is everybody got machine guns and made them better and better and better. In World War I, you had machine guns all over the place. And so when Oppenheimer said that in the movie, we all went, oh, the Civil War and the machine gun. Got it.
Holy cow. You know? Yep. Right.
Yeah. But it's that dream that someone has of, if you see how horrible this is, you will surely come to your senses. And he was so definite in his belief, Oppenheimer was. And it made sense. You see that bomb going off. And that's when he sees the impact and magnitude of it. And he suddenly starts going, but what if they don't? He's like, you have to use it. Everybody has to see it. And later he starts to doubt that. Now I'm told these people were on the edge of defeat, but I actually believe that they would have gone on fighting. It doesn't matter if they were going to be defeated or not. And a lot of people would have died.
Yeah.
And you had to see it. And we all know there's other circumstances than any of those people knew.
Yeah. And the thing is, we don't know, right? We think, you know, yeah. And then, it's a guess. And that's the thing, you know, it's a guess based on what we know at the time. And, yeah. But yeah. And Matt Damon, the moment when Matt Damon explained to him, well, we're going to drop two, we're going to drop one so that, they see it. Right. And we're going to drop they another know we can one do it. So that they know we'll keep doing it until they stop. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And just Oppenheimer's just shock at that. And it certainly worked exactly like they hoped, you know.
Yeah.
I think it was in A Song for Nagasaki. It explained there was something about the emperor, if I recall. And when the first one was dropped, it's, you know, they didn't surrender. They, you know, they were rallying around the emperor and everything. And
well, he wanted to surrender.
The emperor wanted to
But the
to
samurai
right.
generals wouldn't, and right. they were running everything. And yeah. when the second one landed, he's like, that's I'm not right. waiting around for you guys anymore. I've got to stop this now.
Yeah, then that's it. We got to
I'll give out. Up everything. Yeah. yeah, exactly.
So the plan worked, according to the government, exactly like they hoped, you know. And then, of course, since then, you know, moving into the 1950s, which I discovered that Oppenheimer was very involved in scientific policy. You know, he was showing up everywhere and saying, hey, this is not the direction we should go. We should go this direction. We should, you know, not be stockpiling these weapons. We should be doing something different. And then one of the interesting things to me between Oppenheimer and Robert Downey, it's Strauss, right? Robert Downey Jr.'s character, is again, I'm struck by how history is altered by personalities. You know, when we read history and we're just like, this guy didn't like that guy. And therefore this happened, you know, and you're like, holy smokes, you know. But it's just like that. Strauss was turned off by Oppenheimer, sort of dissed in some hearing at some point, and just didn't like the guy and wanted him removed. And he was starting in his shadow government way, he actually said shadow government. He was using behind the scenes to push this guy out. And he did it. I mean, you know, so he was able to do that. He was later taken down for it. But it just, again, it's just striking that it's just some guy, you know what I mean? And it's like, man, you know.
Yeah, he was so vindictive and so, they set it all up, you know, he was a shoe salesman or something, or
yes,
his father was, and they're like, well, everybody's got people like that in their family, but he was really taking it to heart. So when he felt as if, Einstein and Oppenheimer were sharing a joke about him, as the one guy says at the end, it's like, no one knows what they were talking about. They might have been talking about something more important than just you.
Than you, which was just great. And it turns out that they were not talking about him, you know, which was crazy. Although I guess they kind of were talking about him, weren't they?
What Einstein was saying, he goes, do you remember you gave me that award?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I did. And he goes, but at the same time, you said I was out of touch with the results of my science. And he goes,
yeah, the implications of what he did.
That's
right?
it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, so you weren't really giving me the award. You were giving yourself the award. And he goes, and it's going to happen to you. And it does, because they're intercutting that with the hearing that he's in, where he's just being attacked viciously. And then also Strauss, Robert Downey Jr.'s character, has the same exact thing happen to him, and not through anybody maneuvering it. But just because they're like, well, I mean, that people either do or don't want him to be on the cabinet.
Right.
But he winds up being the victim of the same sort of thing. Hmm. Who are going to be the witnesses? He says, well, they're not witnesses. They're just kind of tell us what's going on. And well, I have to have that. No, because it's not a trial. It's the same exact thing.
Yes.
He did. Yeah. And he now is on the receiving end of it. But he is taking it so to heart. I mean, in the sense that he's viewing it as, well, it is personal, but he's so vindictive. That last speech or two he gives where he's like, Oppenheimer set this all up on purpose.
Yeah.
Because that's how he thinks. Because that's how he does stuff.
Exactly.
That's how Strauss does it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the
so
old,
it was
yeah.
an interesting character study because Oppenheimer, we have been allowed to see, has been following the truth as it was revealed to him, as you pointed out to me when we were talking before the podcast, but we never know everything.
Yeah, he never has the full truth. And he does have this line where the world is opening up to him as the movie goes on, mm-hmm. if you do it linearly. But as his life moves forward, it's opening to him, and he's gaining more and more information. And then you got to wonder, you know, and this may be one of the points of the movie is like, if he had known everything, would he have done it the same? You know, I think he had to too, which is the hard, you know, I think you talked a little bit about the modern world and how morally it's just this big knot, isn't it? And this is kind of an example of, it's a moral knot. And, this is like one of the supreme examples of it, because if they did not develop the bomb, then Germany could have, you know, we have to assume that they would have got it.
They were on the track. They were doing
right. it. Right. So it's just like, we have no choice but to do that. And yet Oppenheimer it's like he was punishing himself. I don't know. I'd love your opinion here, because it was like he was just riddled with guilt after the bomb was dropped. He was just like, did I do the right thing? You know, he was questioning himself. Mm-hmm. His wife, at the time, the Kitty Oppenheimer, who is a real piece of work. Emily Blunt was fantastic. Way to go, Emily Blunt.
She was. But, you know, if you ever wondered if she could really act, oh, yeah.
Oh, man, yeah. But, you know, for her to say, you know, you can't let these people step on you. It's not like they're going to forgive you for what you've done. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a martyr or anything like this, but it's like one of the things that's harsh about the movie, it seems to me, is that there is no redemption. He never is at a point where he lets that go or has the grace to move forward from it. It's like he's there now.
Yeah, and in a sense, that kind of nebulous ending that way is because it reflects our own struggles with these kind of questions.
That's nice, yeah.
As a society.
Mm-hmm.
And because the reason we can understand the story and understand Oppenheimer's point of view as he's progressing and going, wow, I feel really bad about this. Oh, no, what should I have done? What can I do to fix it? Because all the things he was saying were the right kinds of things to fix it. But the world wasn't going to listen to him.
Yeah.
Then right. None of the governments wanted to hear it. They weren't going to think like that, and they still don't. Honestly.
Yeah. What did you think of Truman's talk with him?
I mean, I have to say, when he was like, he was saying, get that crybaby out of here. And I was like, yeah, he's kept doing that crybaby thing. But the thing was Truman saw it as something he gets credit for.
Yeah,
he himself gets credit for. He's like, no one's going to remember you for Hiroshima or Nagasaki.
Yeah,
they're going to remember me. And he's saying it as a victorious thing, which it should be comforting to Robert or to Oppenheimer, because he doesn't want to be remembered for that. But he's actually not worried so much that he'll be remembered for it. He's just worried about the implications going forward.
Right. He's just like, we need to think about this. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did say at one point when he was trying to reassure some scientists who he was recruiting for Alamo,
Los Alamos.
Yeah. Los Alamos. Thank you.
Yeah.
So he was saying this to some scientists that he was trying to recruit for Los Alamos was, we're not responsible morally for what is done with what we invent.
Hmm.
And there is both the truth and the flaw.
Hmm.
I mean, I think it's one of those things that you really can't solve necessarily every time, because this is that old question we've talked about. Just because you can do something, should you?
Yeah, should you?
And so what is the moral implication of that? The moral implication is it better to never release a bomb like that and stop the war and win it definitively? Mm. Or is it better to let all those soldiers die and all those civilians die and all everything? Or is it better to make, as Takashi Nagai said, one big example? Because he just had such a beautiful... See, this is the Catholic faith. It is so perfect.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry if you're not Catholic or Christian. But I'm just saying, it covers... They've thought about all that stuff. And he said, we should be glad that we were used as an example to show why this should never happen again.
Mm.
Our suffering should be offered to God to give wisdom to everybody about it.
Right. And if only they would have wisdom.
Well, I mean, and yeah, but
it hasn't happened since, but
no, but look at the Old Testament. Mm. How many times has God let us reap what we sow? Because the only way we'll turn to Him is because we have to see the practical consequences of what we're doing. You know, there's Job, and that's, of course, not exactly the same thing. But there's Jonah, left sitting complaining because he doesn't have any shade. Well, in the meantime, all these people have been saved. And God's like, I should kill these people because you hate them? you know, you've got all these points of view on this.
Mm-hmm.
So, and the Bible shows all this stuff for us to think about and to turn us to God. And then the church takes it and just refines it so that we can use this to kind of live with.
Yeah.
Because sometimes there's no good choice.
Yeah, sometimes there isn't. Right.
And it's, you don't,
that's a brutally, brutally difficult choice. I mean, nuclear power itself could be solving all of our problems right now, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking about environmental issues and things. And man, if we were getting all our electricity from nuclear power, we'd have no emissions. So,
and it's so much further down the road than the early things that worried everybody.
Yeah, right.
That a lot of that's been solved.
Yeah. I think Jane Fonda's still against it, though.
Oh, Lord. Well, as long as somebody as brilliant as her, I guess I gotta listen.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I love what you're saying about the church, too. And I looked up a few things.
Good.
Just because this has spurred these thoughts in me, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we have sin. So this is in the Catechism, 1868. It says, you know, sin is a personal act. Moreover, we have a responsibility for the sins committed by others when we cooperate in them.
Ooh.
By participating directly and involuntarily in them, by ordering, advising, praising, or approving them, by not disclosing or not hindering them when we have an obligation to do so, and then last, by protecting evildoers. And,
But is it a sin?
And that's the question, right? That's the question. This is where my mind goes, right? You know, because it's a tough one, right? You know, there's a church document, Vatican II document, Gaudium et Spes, and in there it's talking, I mean, this is after the bomb, so this is 1965, I think. But in there it's really clear. It's like, you shall not destroy cities, you know, with right. bombs, right? It says, let's be clear about this, right?
Yeah.
And so, and then you have the whole just war thing. I mean, we were at war with Japan and everything like that. It's a super hard thing. You know, was it the right thing? Wasn't it the right thing? I can find arguments both ways. And it's hard for me to make that determination. And I think that is why there's this moral knot in the modern world. And it's not just this, but there's just so many other things, right? so many things that we in the modern world are dealing with. And I don't know that it's different now than it was throughout history, but it feels like it, but it may only because I'm in it. I don't know.
I think that's why.
Yeah.
When you're in it, you can't, we look back at history, we can see what happened.
Right. And there was a lot. Yeah.
Or the story we're told about it.
Right. You know? Right.
But I don't think, I mean, they really didn't know what was going to happen.
Yeah, they had no idea.
The thing that's kind of beautiful about the story and the way it's told is, and he says this to the panel that's, or the whoever it is that's, you know, at questioning him later. He says, you know, I did it because of the theory.
Yeah.
And they're like, really? And he goes, well, yes and no. You know, he wanted, and he said, they're my people who are being dragged away into concentration camps. Hmm. He wanted to stop all that. And that's valid.
Yeah.
And we, and luckily in that war, we were attacked.
Yeah.
You know, so we're, in that sense, we're not the aggressors. We're not trying to do whatever it is. So you have a valid right to defend the innocent.
Absolutely. And so it does say that in the just war, what do we call that? The just war principle, or it's not, it's not a doctrine,
no,
right?
No, I don't think so, but right. Theory,
yeah,
maybe.
Just war theory, right.
But see, even in a just war theory, you have to still stop and decide. But I feel like it can boil down to something as simple as you're in your house and someone breaks in and starts attacking you or whatever. Mm-hmm. You're going to defend yourself and your family in any way that you can. And you can't really make the direct equivalent to your country or whatever, but that's basically what you're doing.
Yeah.
You have the right to defend yourself. And so in that sense, that's right. And to get them to stop it, because I mean, the South Seas War, whatever you would call it, that front was brutal.
It sure was. Yeah. You know, the Pacific. It absolutely was.
Yeah. The Pacific. It was just brutal. And you could also see the very brutal nature of the Japanese military in when they had attacked China before and taken over Manchuria and done all this. So they knew the sort of mentality they were up against before they even got into the Pacific War. But, A Song for Nagasaki talks about that. That's some of the stuff that made Takashi Nagai go, what are we doing?
Yeah,
as a people, who are we?
Yeah.
He was
and they mentioned that in the movie, too. There was a line that I caught where somebody said, Japan is just about to fall. And then he says, well, tell our guys that, you know. That's supposed to make these guys more comfortable going in. Is that that was the take on it? Is like, yeah, there's still going to be lots of lives lost.
Yeah, I think that was Matt Damon's general character, right?
I think so.
And I loved him. Mm-hmm. He also was having to balance this pragmatic military way of doing things with a bunch of nutty seeming scientists.
Mm.
You know, and I really loved his description of Oppenheimer when he's like, well, I've been told you're an egotistical womanizer who's, you know, all these things. And it was like, and later he's like, oh, I begin to see why you were described to me like that. You know, he's like, and he was right. Mm-hmm. But within his views, Oppenheimer was trying to live by the truth. He just didn't care about a lot of that stuff. He would take another man's wife. He would do whatever.
Yeah.
Because all he was thinking about was his own point of view then.
Mm-hmm.
The general I liked because he could really see the big picture.
Right. That he could. Yeah. And it's interesting just to contemplate, you know, if you build a knife, you're not responsible for how the knife was used. But then again, you think, okay, well, the knife has a lot of positive uses.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you're building a bomb, it's less clear because what other use is there? I know Oppenheimer's idea was, well, we won't use it. You know, we'll just show them. you know, let's get him down here. You know, he wanted to let's bring him to New Mexico.
Right.
You know, let's just blow it up right here and then say, we're going to drop this on you. Or, you know, just say, hey, we're going to drop this on the ocean off your mm-hmm. border or something like that. But instead, you know, that's what we did. So, but it's a lot to contemplate.
Well, and in that sense, his intentions were pure.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But I liked, that, of course, it's based on a book called American Prometheus.
Hmm.
And then they start off with quotes, I guess, from the book about Prometheus stealing fire.
Yeah.
And Prometheus is punished by the gods every day. I think, doesn't a bird come and eat his liver out or something? Liver.
I wonder what the significance of the liver is. But, yeah, eats his liver and it grows then, back and they eat it and they, yeah. But
right, every day and then it grows back, right, exactly. Mm. And so, and in that sense, of course, this whole movie is just, that's it. He brought a new kind of fire and now his liver is getting eaten out every day.
Right.
And he thinks about it and then he thinks he's got a new front and grows back and gets picked out again, you know.
Yeah.
So, because mankind isn't paying the price other than having the fire and doing the positive or negative things it does.
Yeah.
Prometheus is paying the price.
Mm-hmm.
And that's elevating Oppenheimer to demigod type status. If you just go directly, we can't. But he is somebody who could make that happen. And most other people couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the German scientists could and everything. But when you're just looking at the world and all the people in it, just a few people who could make it happen.
Yeah.
So, and hence I think his moral problems.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to say, as this movie presents him, and that's the story Christopher Nolan is telling us, I really had to give him honor. Crybaby though he was at the end, he was crying about the right stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And I've never seen Truman portrayed that way. Of course, I've never really seen anything about Truman. I was like,
I haven't seen a ton about Truman either.
I thought he was a nice guy.
Yeah, I love that Gary Oldman did it, though. He's covering all of the World War II leaders. Yeah.
Yeah.
So we need to have him as Stalin now.
Yeah. Well, that's it, really. But it was so funny.
But yeah, it's. I remember what Oppenheimer said now. He said, I feel like I have blood on my hands. Mm. And then that's when Truman responded so roughly.
He waves his handkerchief at him.
Yeah. Here. He's like, here, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. And then says, yeah, don't let that crybaby back in here. Was that what Truman was like? He was like, wow. Because I honestly
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'd have to read. There's some definitive book about
him. Yeah, true. I think it's David McCullough, I think.
Probably. Yeah. He's such a good author. Mm-hmm. But I don't tend to read those kind of books.
Yeah.
So
I've read a few. I enjoyed them.
I had.
Yeah.
Yeah. The thing is, though, is I also enjoyed in the filmmaking, when you're watching, you realize there are the four or five stories going on, right?
Mm-hmm.
But and you get the feeling, I did it for a while, I was like, and some of the stories are told in black and white, and then I went, no, one story is told in black and white, and that's Strauss's version of what's going on.
Mm.
His vision of things is black and white. His vision of the past, and even when he's testifying or listening to the testimony before the congressional hearing, it's all black and white. And the reason it's black and white, I think, of course, just my interpretation, but of course, he sees the world in black and white. Eisenhower and Oppenheimer did make fun of him. Oppenheimer did want to take him down. Oppenheimer did plan all this stuff. You know, I had to do this because of that.
Right.
And yeah. Oppenheimer's story has often rich, bewildering images popped through it. And especially at the beginning, we're seeing all these things as he's looking out the window or thinking about things on his bed, looking tortured, which Cillian Murphy's such a great actor. But, and it is so artfully told because at the time we're thinking, oh, these are just kind of like imaginings of the star imploding or of what could be or, you know, the raindrops and everything. And then as the movie goes on, you're like, oh, that's where that image came from.
Hmm.
it's showing all the things that are going to happen later with these images as he is there in his nascent scientific mode where he hasn't really studied or learned what he needs to, but he's got the potential for it.
Yeah, yeah, because a nuclear bomb worked just like the star that he was talking about. He said it implodes and it focuses in and then it blows up again. And, you know, it's like, wow, that's exactly how they did it, you know.
Exactly. And so all those things with the streaks of fire and everything, just amazing. This is the world he lives in. And this is partly why he can't really focus on people very well, I think. But then, of course, you contrast that with Strauss, who he is definite about everything. And it makes him into a small, twisted, vindictive character. So in that sense, it's also kind of arguing that to be too certain of anything is trouble. It's in that sense a warning that you can't lock yourself into stuff that way. Because you open your vision.
Yeah, I really, really like that. Because, yeah, if you contrast those two, then Oppenheimer, again, his conscience is being informed with more and more information, and he's changing as the time goes forward, whereas Strauss does not. Strauss is just stuck. Even with untruth. Even with falsity. I love that. That's a really nice contrast between those two. Beautiful.
Well, and I was blown away the first time I saw the movie, and I'd start to see these images like the raindrops on the pond or whatever, and I'm like, oh my gosh, that was used here in the front. Oh my gosh, that's from there. Well, and how do you like the idea of so desiring to push the test of the theory that it's almost 0% that they won't catch the atmosphere on fire and destroy the entire world?
Yeah, that's fun. I read this book called The Los Alamos Primer. And I can't remember who wrote it. I should have looked it up before here. But I didn't even think about it till just now. But anyway, what it is it was the lectures that were given to people as they arrived at Los Alamos, scientists. They arrived at Los Alamos, and there was a series of lectures that they would give them in a classroom setting to catch them up. And say, this is what we're doing. This is the state of the science. This is what we don't know. And there's really cool little pieces of autobiographical information in it. You know, not only the things, but there'll be, like, I remember I was giving this lecture and a workman fell through the roof while I was talking. You know, I mean, little details like that. You're like, wow, because they were building they were going on. But anyway, he addressed the whole the atmosphere is going to light on fire thing, and they had discarded that a long time ago. It was discussed, but they were like, no, that can't happen. And according to their math, it was zero. Nobody was worried about that at the time. And he actually said that. But it did come up. It's fair enough for Nolan to have that in there because it did come up. And but I think that the line it says, you know, we don't know for sure. Again, you know, theory will only take us so far, which is a line that's repeated throughout, right? But we don't know what's going to happen. And, you know, it's just, I mean, if we go to today and we have AI and all this stuff and we are like blitzing down this road at an extremely fast pace. And we don't know what's going to happen. You know, there are ideas and things, but it could light the whole place on fire. We don't know, you know, and I think that's the whole idea of, it's a recurring idea, you know, from Prometheus even. It's like, again, we're moving so fast that we're not stopping to say, you know, should we, or, you know, and the thing is, in this world of ours, there is no, it's like, should we is never, even if I say we shouldn't, somebody else in the world is going to move forward. You know what I mean? It's like, again, you know, the fire's out of the box. It's just going to be happening now. And, you know, it's that way with knowledge in the human race. And isn't that interesting? You know,
the ways people take it up and just have their own particular focus to look at it and use the information they're given. I mean, the easy thing to kind of look at now is COVID. we were felt, I think, everybody was panicking. Mm-hmm. No one knew what to do. And all anyone could think is, with our advanced knowledge and everything, here's absolutely what we should do.
Yeah.
Let's all, you know, isolate or whatever. Mm-hmm. And of course, just like Oppenheimer, we don't know what would have happened otherwise because we didn't do that.
Right.
We can all look at it and go yes or no or whatever. And here we are later going, well, here are the problems that have come up now because of that. You know, kids having lost a certain amount of learning that maybe they say they'll never get back, which I don't think that can possibly really be true, but that's just my idea.
Yeah.
But, you know, people don't want to go back to work in offices and all the things that have happened.
Yeah, even still now today, socially. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Still today. Yeah. But you're right. And there was also a reluctance to move forward with what was occurring. It was like, okay, our initial reaction is we got to stay home. And mm-hmm. then as stuff would be learned, it wasn't reacted to well enough. And they say, oh, this isn't, you know, this is affecting this group. I mean, it was like COVID was affecting kids almost not at all. So what are we doing
right.
here? You know what I mean?
Because Sweden just left the schools open, right? And that's why I was looking at that going, something's wrong here. And the way they were isolating the really elderly, I mean, it was just, you know, is their life worth just living in a box and never being able to see their relatives, even if they're dying? Is that really what, for people who want to give quality life, life itself became more precious than the way people were living.
Hmm.
It was really inhumane. I mean, but so a lot of different groups were suffering from that.
Yeah.
And,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's like the bomb.
Mm-hmm.
You drop it. You think it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And we second guess it, and people will second guess it forever now.
And I think that second guessing is good. You know,
yeah,
that's part of what Oppenheimer wanted, right?
Absolutely.
Is that we should be, you know, we should be thinking about whether we're ever going to do that again. You know, when and if the mm-hmm. time comes where that becomes a possibility. Boy, you know, I sure hope they think about it. Yeah. It needs to be, I hope it never happens. There's just so many of them around. It's hard to believe that it won't.
Well, but you know, look how long went by.
Yeah,
for
very
this
true.
Happen.
I mean, very
but,
true.
You know, I can't worry about that stuff. But yeah, there's going to be a certain level of civil disobedience in this country if something like that happens soon enough.
You would
in human
think.
Memory that everybody goes, oh, no, that's not happening again.
Right.
But, so this movie is interesting because it shows us somebody who has no, I don't want to say he has no moral center, but he kind of has no moral center. He's discovering it as he goes through his life. And, of course, for all of us, even people raised in the church by people who are giving you the right culture and everything to think about, everybody's got to have those moments where they stop and start reflecting on what do I really believe and how do I live my life going forward? And then you're struggling to put that into effect the rest of your life. And that's where, as I was saying, I loved the idea of, you know, I was glad my friend brought this up because I liked the idea of thinking about the Nagasaki, the book about Takashi Nagai.
Yeah.
And he had a similar path. I mean, he was all about science. And he had to learn to live a different way and think a different way by being exposed to it through being a boarder with that family, all the things. And he wound up becoming, and I don't know why he's not a saint. I guess there have been no miracles. But being, you know, certainly an extremely holy person who I really respect so much.
Yeah, me too. He's an admirable person.
Yeah. And Oppenheimer lived through politics in the public eye that way. Mm-hmm. There was nothing, I mean, and I get it, that's what he was good at and everything, but what was it hung on?
There was no moral center or
right
bedrock that he was standing on.
No, because look at, I mean, he stuck with Kitty once he found her. Mm-hmm. But she was, I have to say, that character was just so perplexing to me. But the only time in the whole movie I liked her was when she was being questioned by that prosecutor.
Yes, that was good.
And she'd just laugh and he'd go, are you not going to answer? She goes, no, it's just you phrased it so poorly. You phrased it wrong.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah,
really something.
Yeah, I just loved watching her essentially tear him to shreds without raising her voice ever or being obviously vicious at all about it. And watching Oppenheimer kind of glance over at her, I was like, oh, this is that super sharp mental ability that he's obviously drawn to. The meeting of the minds. You know, she can keep up with him and surpass him.
Right, right. Yeah, nice point on that too. Yeah, I hadn't really thought of that, but I agree with it. Yep, she was sharp. Yep, take the sheets in.
Yeah.
That's good. But yeah, and I love everything you said about Nagai too. That was, again, I couldn't not have that in my head while I was watching this.
Yeah, he's a saint for our time because just his views on suffering. And my goodness, you know, he was living what he preached. He understood that, you know, of course we try to avoid it, but you can't. And so what are you going to get out of it? Well, of course, drawn closer to God. And look at the world we're in. And look at what people do to try to avoid suffering.
Yes, or
try to solve a problem in a way that's just going to make them suffer more, but they can't see it until they've done it.
Yeah, and you just brought up that example during COVID. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, going to such great lengths to avoid suffering that you would live a life that's devoid of the stuff that's meaningful.
Yeah.
Right? You isolate yourself so hard that, you know, now you're living life and you're wondering, what's the point?
Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, like I say, those old people who would just have to look out the window at their loved ones, and some of them weren't in their right minds anyway. They don't understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, it all broke my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But that really broke my heart.
Right.
Or people dying alone. I mean, that's where the church is always remembering the dignity of the person and the humanity of each person, and that God is reflected in them.
Mm.
How do you treat people, you know? Is keeping them safe from dying worth that? Because most of them were dying anyway. They didn't know how to stop it. And again, it's that thing of everybody's doing the best they can.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you feel like, oh, the humanity. It's just awful.
Yeah. Yep. It's difficult sometimes, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Again, it's that knot. And that knot may have existed throughout time. May not call it a modern knot or not, but there is a knot.
Yeah.
There is a knot. Things are not simple. Yeah. Yeah. It takes time to think through that stuff, right? But the church is a guide, you know, like that, you know, the thing I was reading about sin and the development of conscience and I mean, there's so much thought, so many things, so many saints to read, all those things. Well,
Yeah, and just the catechism. In touch.
Yep.
Does just, you know, a beautiful job of summing up all that stuff. And I've been reading now and then, because you can't just sit and binge these things, but John Paul II's encyclicals, and they're so rich and thoughtful and in touch with everyday life at the same time that they're in touch with the history of humanity.
Mm.
Through scripture and, you know, God.
Yeah.
And everything. And it's those things, I think, even if we don't always grasp everything in them, keeping exposed to that kind of stuff, as well as people like, you know, Takashi Nagai, it helps remind us of what the real touchstones in our lives should be. I mean, science is very well. Trying to manage the economies very well. But we're here to make the ripples in our lives around us.
Yeah.
And you can't do that by treating people like things.
Mm.
And that's really essentially what Oppenheimer suddenly realized. These are real people that we're talking about.
Yeah.
When they showed him looking at the stadium of, you know, cheering, triumphant scientists and everybody, and he's seeing them, you know, attacked by radiation in his imagination. And of course, that's kind of what it's, this affects all of us.
Well put.
What is the John Donne, is it John Donne poem? Ask not for whom the bell tolls, it tolls for thee.
Mm.
And they quoted the thing of I am death.
Yeah. It's
from Sanskrit.
Right, right.
Which is too bleak.
Destroyer of worlds, right.
Yeah.
Very bleak, very bleak. But this is kind of a bleak movie.
Well, yeah, it's engaging, it's interesting, it's, you know, you've got all these aha moments in it. You have, you know, the moment when Strauss was taken down was just delicious, I'm just going to say. I loved it.
Yes.
I knew it was coming, and I could not wait for it. But yeah, because it's also that reflection of our current set of moral standards. And that's kind of the beginning of maybe, or at that time, I guess, all that uncertainty seeping in because there's no moral center.
Hmm.
It doesn't mean we might not still feel that way.
Right.
But
right.
You've got the moral center. And because God always gives us hope, the modern, you know, uncertainty and everything has an answer, and the answer is Jesus. I mean, I'm sorry to get super duper Catholic, but you guys have been, anybody who's been listening knows it. You know, but that's what it is. And Christ gives us joy, which is not always the same as happiness, and hope.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, love.
Yeah, absolutely. Love.
Yeah.
Yep. Wonderful.
So why did you pick it?
For these themes, I mean, we hit on pretty much everything that I was thinking of. I mean, the big stuff about conscience, just war, his journey. It's like hubris in the Tower of Babel,
you know, which we kind of hit. The Tower of Babel. Here we are again. When I say, when you were saying, oh, we hit those knots again. Yeah. Yep.
There we go.
Do we even stop to ask? Nope. That's right. Just keep building it.
That's right. And then I couldn't help, and I did mention this earlier, but I couldn't help but think, even in the first time I saw it, that, you know, I called the movie bleak, but again, it just feels like there wasn't the redemptive moment. And I thought that that was an interesting thing. So, but I loved what you said about that. That really settled in my head. You said, well, he left it that way for a reason, you know, for the reason that that's kind of us out in the world feeling unsettled as well about things, you know, not only this specific thing, but just about, you know, morality in general. And again, sometimes it's complicated.
Yeah. And we're kind of being reminded because there's that last scene or close to the last scene where he's gotten one of those medals. It's the moment Einstein talked about.
Mm-hmm.
You're being given the award, but they're really awarding themselves, you know, and all his old friends are lining up to shake his hand. Kitty also, I think if we saw Kitty's story, she also would have been told in black and white because there's certain scientists she's never going to forgive.
Yeah.
As we see from her face. And she's the one going, fight back, fight back.
Yeah. You know? And she did not shake that guy's hand.
She didn't.
At the Oval Office.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
Right.
But, and so that's also the idea of, you know, don't just rest on your laurels, I guess, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
They're going to pass you by and they're not going to pay attention. So then again, I come back to, so you have to have something more than that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Agreed. That's good advice all the way through. So I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. I wanted to mention, I think I've mentioned on this podcast before recently, The Rest is History.
Yes.
Which is just so wonderful. And they did a several part series about Oppenheimer.
Very good.
I did not have a chance. I meant to listen to it, but I didn't have a chance. But it was in June of 2023.
Okay.
This will tell you how many they've done. It's like, you know, episode 343, 344, because it's The Father of the Atomic Bomb, The Witch Hunt, And whatever I'm looking at isn't showing the others. I think there's three or four episodes of it. So
I may
listen to that now that we've done it, because I understand that Tom Holland is bringing Napoleon up and somewhere in there. And I'm real curious to hear how that all happens.
Well, let's hear that. Yeah. Now I'm curious too.
Yeah.
Very much. Yeah. Well, good. Yeah. And then I got to catch up on some of those. I do like that podcast, but I haven't listened to it a ton.
They've got so many episodes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that there's another Christopher Nolan in our future here, because he's doing The Odyssey
right now. Yes. Yeah.
So that should be some pretty good stuff.
Has that been cast yet?
It's actually, they're filming right now.
Yeah. Ooh.
Yeah. And I think, in fact, if I'm here on IMDb, I think Odysseus is Matt Damon.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
And then Telemachus is Tom Holland. Not the Tom Holland from the podcast, but the Tom Holland from Spider-Man.
Got it.
And Zendaya's in it, and Robert Pattinson's in it, and Charlize Theron.
Is Tom Hardy in it?
He's Hathaway.
He's doing a TV show now, so
John
maybe.
John Bernthal.
Well.
I don't see.
He is an actor's director, though. I mean, he's like Hitchcock was. Mm-hmm. They just lift their finger and the actors just fall over trying to get there.
Yeah.
So he really gets the cream of the crop. That's great. Okay. Well, wow. I'm very excited.
Yeah. It should be good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Should be fun stuff.
Oh, yeah. So
cool. All right. Well, what's next for us? Next for us is not The Odyssey, because that's too far away.
Yeah.
But next for us is Death of a Red Heroine by Q Zilong. I'm sorry if I've been mispronounced it.
Yeah. We have no idea how
it's
to say that.
It's a Chinese name. Q-I-U. Mm-hmm. And then X-I-A-O-L-O-N-G.
Yeah. I think it should be pronounced or something like that. But who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? I'll try
like President
Xi, right.
You know? Which X-I.
Yeah, right.
So anyway, yeah. So that's a mystery set in 1990s Shanghai.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a lot of culture with your mystery. There are a lot of political commentary, but it's, I think, woven in real well as this inspector and his number one helper try to figure out who did this murder.
Yeah. I'm about a third of the way through it. Enjoying it so far.
Oh, good.
Yep.
Glad to hear
it. Yeah, you bet. Can't wait to talk about it. So, all right. Okay. Well, thanks for listening, everyone.
Yeah. Have a great couple weeks. We'll talk to you again soon.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.